Hello and welcome to the Money, Mind, and Meaning podcast. I am Dr. Daniel Crosby, your host. Today we are taking on a frequent question that I get, which is, do I need a financial advisor? Because after all, years ago, brokers and advisors were the guardians of financial data. They were the keepers of the stock quote. Today, investors need just an iPhone and a free Robinhood account to do what just 30 years ago was the exclusive purview of Wall Street. So in such an age as this, it's worth asking, you know, is my advisor really earning her fee? An appeal to the research, it lends us some unexpected answers. And I think the answer, to tell you the end from the beginning, the answer is a resounding yes, but I'll say that it's for none of the reasons that you probably thought. So listen on. In a seminal paper titled Advisors Alpha, the famously fee-sensitive folks at Vanguard estimated that the value added by working with a great financial advisor is about 3% a year. The paper is quick to point out, though, that the 3% delta is not achieved in a smooth, linear fashion. The benefits of working with an advisor are lumpy, and they're most concentrated during times of profound fear and greed. You know, I think one of the reasons I get this question so much in the last couple of years is that if you had just bought an S&P 500 index fund for, you know, 0.03% and bought and held it, you would have been crushing it. Well, it's not always like this. Markets don't always go this way, and advisors add a lot of value when you are in danger of being your worst enemy. So this uneven distribution of advisor value presages a second truth that we'll discuss shortly, that the best use of a financial advisor is as a behavioral coach rather than an asset manager. Okay, so further evidence of advisor efficacy is added by a Morningstar paper called Alpha, Beta, and Now Gamma. So Gamma is Morningstar's shorthand for the, quote, extra income an investor can earn by making better financial decisions. And they cast improving decision-making as the primary benefit of working with a financial advisor. Again, you're not hiring a junior Warren Buffett. You're hiring someone to keep you from being an idiot, to keep you from making a handful of life-threatening financial decisions over a lifetime. In their attempt at quantifying Gamma, Morningstar arrived at a figure of 1.82% per year outperformance for those receiving advice aimed at improving their financial choices. So again, we see evidence that advisors are more than earning their fee and that improving decision-making is the primary means by which they improve investment outcomes. So finally, research conducted by Aon Hewitt and managed accounts provider Financial Engines also supports the idea that advice pays big dividends. Their research was a blend of in-person and online advice. So their initial research was conducted from 2006 to 2008 and compared those receiving help in the form of online advice, guidance through target date funds, or managed accounts to those who did it themselves. Their finding during this time was that those who received help outperformed those who didn't by 1.86% per year net of fees, so closer to 3% gross, 1.86% per year net. So seeking to examine the impact of this lumpiness that we talked about earlier, the impact of this help during volatile times, they subsequently performed a similar analysis of help versus no help groups that included the uncertain days of 2009 and 2010. They found the impact of decision-making assistance was heightened during times of volatility, and the outperformance of the group jumped to 2.92% net of fees, about 4% gross. Again, just as we found in the Vanguard study, the benefits of advice are disproportionately experienced during tough times, when rational decision-making becomes difficult and all reason tends to fly out the window. So it seems like we have some evidence that good financial guidance tends to pay off somewhere in the ballpark of 2-3% a year. Now, these numbers don't seem huge at first for the average investor, 2-3% a year, and it doesn't sound so hot. But 3% a year over a lifetime is monumental. Monumental. If financial advice really does work, the compounded impact of that could potentially even double your terminal wealth, That 3% a year is a very, very big deal over a long period of time. So in their 2012 Value Advice Report, the Investment Funds Institute of Canada, where I now live, found that investors who purchase financial advice are more than 1.5 times more likely to stick with their long-term investment plan than those who don't. Because of this commitment to a game plan, the wealth discrepancies between families that receive advice and those who don't grows over time. So for those who receive 4 to 6 years of advice, the multiple attributable to advice is 1.58. So basically, those who've gotten about 5 years of advice have 1.5 times the wealth of their no advice compatriots. Those receiving 7 to 14 years of advice nearly double up their no advice peers at 1.99x. And those with a long-term relationship, those receiving 15 or more years of advice, clocked in at an overwhelming 2.73x multiple relative to their no advice peers. So 273% more money than people their same age who had not received that advice. Good financial advice pays in the short run, sure, but the multiplication of those gains over an investing lifetime is really quite staggering. So hopefully at this point, there's little doubt in your mind that the cumulative effects of receiving good advice are impressive. But let's look beyond dollars and cents. You know, I'm a shrink. Let's talk about the good that we can do in lives. Because after all, even if you knew how to manage your money, even if you could do it with enough time, there are many people, many of us, who are perfectly capable of mowing a lawn, cleaning a home, or painting a room, who hire those jobs out. You may even have lawn mowing skill equal to that of the person you hire, but you might enjoy the peace of mind and increased time with loved ones as a result of delegating. So in the financial world, this principle is no less valuable. And we find that there's evidence that people who receive good financial advice are actually happier and better prepared. So the Canadian Value of Advice report found that those paying for financial advice reported a greater sense of confidence and more certainty about their ability to retire comfortably and having higher level of funds for an emergency. A different study, performed by the Financial Planning Standards Council, found that 61% of those paying for financial advice answered affirmatively to, "I have peace of mind," compared to just 36% of their no advice peers. Now again, this is not financial peace of mind, this is just global peace of mind. It speaks to how central a role money plays in our lives, and if we can get the money thing figured out, we're a lot happier. So receiving good financial advice pays a dividend that builds both wealth and confidence. The research is unequivocal that a competent financial guide can help you achieve the returns necessary to arrive at your financial destination while improving your journey, your quality of life, all along the way. But there's just one problem. Not all advisors are created equal. And I often get asked, using Madoff as a verb, how someone cannot get Madoffed, right? And so let's talk a little bit about 10 questions you could ask a potential advisor, or heck, even your existing advisor, to vet that individual and to see if they are operating in your best interest. So even though I'm living in Canada right now, I'm an American, and in this country, in my home country, there is still not a global fiduciary standard. So the first of these questions is, are you a fiduciary? So by way of quick explanation, a fiduciary has a legal requirement to place his or her client's interests ahead of their own. So you are going to want someone who has this legal requirement in place. There are nice advisors who are not fiduciaries, but if it's me, if it's my money, I would not leave it to chance. I would want a fiduciary. So question number one is, are you a fiduciary? Do you have a legal requirement to place my interests ahead of your own? Because it's still not a mandate. The second question, understanding what we do, about the value of an advisor now, is how will you keep me from being my own worst enemy? All of the research that we looked at said the best thing your advisor can do is to manage your behavior, to slap the cookie out of your hand if we want to use a dieting analog. So how will you keep me from being my own worst enemy? Don't forget, behavioral coaching is the biggest thing they can do for you. They should have systems and processes in place that will help you navigate this world. The third question would be, how do you charge and how much? So if you have a large account, fees are more negotiable than you might imagine. Okay, so that's one thing you're going to want to understand. And there's also at least two layers of fees. You're going to want to understand what's the fee for advice, and then what's the fee for the funds, the ETFs, the mutual funds, the sort of investment vehicles that you're using. That's one thing that I think people commonly misunderstand. Typically, advice is going to be somewhere in the ballpark of 1% and may go down from there if you have sizable assets. And you should look for people who are trying to minimize fees on investment products. If the all-in fee is over 2%, I would begin to ask some very, very tough questions. The fourth question would be, do you have a niche? You know, some advisors specialize in working with small business owners. Others work with women in transition who might, you know, folks who might be getting a divorce. Others work with those with specific religious or moral considerations, have values-based investment preferences that might be socially responsible. So find someone with a niche that is consistent with your own values. The fifth would be, what services do you offer? Some financial professionals only offer investment advice. Some specialize in planning. Others do a bit of both, and some have a very comprehensive suite of services. So ensure what you're looking for and what you're getting from your advisor is what's going to be consistent with your needs. Number six is, what are your credentials? So a recent piece I saw reported out by Michael Kitsis said that the number one thing that people are looking for in an advisor these days is credentials. You want someone who might have a CFA or a CFP or a PhD, you're gonna look for someone with credentials, someone who has done the work to know what they're talking about. You're gonna wanna look for someone who is engaged in ongoing education and in keeping on top of their game. The seventh is, what is your investment philosophy? So here's where we get a little bit tricky. A clear and concise investment philosophy is a sign of having given this deep thought. So a corny sales pitch is a sign that you should run. And someone should be able to give you their clear and concise investment philosophy in under 5 minutes. Okay? If it takes longer than that, you're being sold. Eighth is, how often will we communicate? Now, this should be driven largely by your needs and preferences. So you're going to be probably somewhere from 1 to 3 or 4 times a year, depending on the complexity of your case and the size of your asset base. So I personally don't need a lot of hand-holding this way. Others want much more of a lifeline. So make sure that your expectations about frequency of communication are aligned with your advisor's expectations. Ninth, I would ask, what's unique about your client experience? You are paying good money for this. What are you going to get in the way of education, coaching, assistance for your children, whatever you're looking for, that will be unique, differentiated, value added? What are you getting for the money? And then finally, I would ask, what is your succession plan? The average advisor in America is a white man in his late 50s. And so on average, you're getting advisors who are going to not be around forever, especially if you're a young person. So I would want someone you're working with is asking you to think about and plan for the future. That's what investing and saving is. They are asking you to do the hard work of thinking about and planning for a future. If they haven't done that themselves with their own business, I would be a little bit worried. So in summary, advisors add a lot of value. That value is primarily around behavioral coaching and handholding. And not all advisors are created equal. Not all act in the best interests of the client. Some charge far too much. Some don't give you much for what they're charging for. So use these 10 questions to separate the wheat from the chaff, to find yourself a great advisor who can meet your specific needs and at a reasonable price, with an emphasis on keeping you from being your own worst enemy. I'm Dr. Daniel Crosby. I hope to hear from you on Twitter at Daniel Crosby. I hope we can connect on LinkedIn, Daniel Crosby, PhD. I'd also be super grateful if you do one of a couple of things for me. The first is to buy a copy of either The Laws of Wealth, my last book that's out right now, or The Behavioral Investor, my forthcoming book, which will be launched in October. A second request is that you tell one person about this podcast. Share it with just one person. And third, I would ask you to leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your great radio like this. Thank you for your assistance. Thank you for your ear, and have a great week.